The following program is sponsored by Cleveland Right to Life and is responsible for its content.
Welcome to From the Median, a daily report from the front line of the pro-life movement, discussing two worldviews that are driving our culture in opposite directions. From the Median asks, which side of the road are you on? What direction do you want our culture to go? Tune in as we plan the route that takes us back to the culture of life. And now your host, Molly Smith.
Good evening and welcome to From the Median, where we are concerned with the middle ground, not just to understand both sides of an argument, but also to awaken the consciences of those who are neutral or indifferent to this, the greatest civil rights movement of all times, the pro-life movement. Listeners, as always, thank you so much for joining us. Great to have you with us. I'm reminding you all, of course, to make sure that our podcasts are always available on your cell phones. Lots and lots of activity via podcasting right now, which is a brand new thing for me. Not so brand new anymore, mind you. I've been doing this for about maybe 18 months now, 2 years, and it's working out very well. So our next interview is going to be somebody that you definitely want to send out to your friends and family via podcast for sure. I am so thrilled to be welcoming back to the program again somebody who is, I think, considered to be one of the best informed when it comes to things about human exceptionalism. And of course, I'm talking about Wesley Smith. Wesley is an award-winning author. He is the host of the Humanized podcast. He's chairman of the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism and a consultant to the Patients' Rights Council. His latest book, which I'm sure you all have already purchased, is Culture of Death, The Age of Do Harm Medicine. Wesley, great to have you back on the program.
Thank you, Molly, of the great last name.
Exactly. Yes, I agree. It's such an unusual name. You know, wherever I go, people go, wow, imagine having a name like that. So, yeah.
Amazing experience last year. I was speaking at an event, and a woman named Julie Smith was standing next to me, and I was kidding her about her last name. And it turns out we were second cousins who never knew each other existed. It was amazing.
Goodness.
What are the odds?
I was going to say, I mean, if we were related to every Smith around, it would be, oh my goodness. Well, that's wonderful. Well, it is a wonderful last name. So let's get going on some of the things that this wonderful last name gentleman, Wesley Smith, has found out for us, because I received one of your podcasts that you had done, articles rather, and it sort of really gave me a shock because, seriously, the title of the article is CDC undercounts suicides by not including assisted deaths. Wow. How can they not do that? I mean, you go on and let's sort of unpack the article, Wesley, because this to me was what we're doing. I mean, we are living, and I say this all the time, we're living down the rabbit hole right now. It's crazy.
Yeah, we're living in very corrupt times and times in which honesty is in short supply. The CDC, of course, tabulates vital statistics for in terms of health. And one of the things that they tabulate is suicide. And suicide has been increasing at a terribly alarming rate. For example, the article that the suicide stat that I pulled was from 2022, and it was 49,449 suicides in the country. So we're talking, since things are still going up, that this year it's going to be over 50,000. But I pointed out in this article that all of the suicides in the country are not included in that statistic, specifically assisted suicides. Now, why is that? It isn't because the CDC is saying, we don't want to include assisted suicide. It's because the states that legalize assisted suicide pass in their statutes require doctors to lie about the causes of death. They will say, the laws will often say, or usually say even, that the cause of death when somebody takes an overdose of drugs prescribed by a doctor isn't the overdose of drugs, it's the underlying disease. Now, that's just flat out false. Mm-hmm. Suicide describes what is done, not why. Even if one supports allowing doctors to prescribe poison to people with serious conditions, it's still suicide. But the issue here is the suicide activists want more people to commit suicide than fewer in this regard, with regard to assisted suicide. And they worry that the term suicide has stigma attached, so they want to medicalize suicide by pretending it's a medical treatment. So I went through the stats very generally. I didn't, you know, go state by state specifically, but at least well over 1,000 assisted suicides per year are basically not reported as suicides. In fact, in 2021, it was about 1,400 people, and it's going up every year. Wow. So this not only reduces the suicide statistics nationally, but in the states where assisted suicide is legal, it distorts their actual suicide rate.
You know, this is very, very disturbing. You know, I recently had Alex Schattenberg on the program with me talking about.
Yes, I know Alex.
Yeah, he's such a great guy. He talks very highly of you too. So, but he was talking about what's happened with this MAID, medical assistance in dying in
medical assistance in dying yeah. The euphemism in Canada.
Yeah.
And it's done here too for, in Canada, it's homicide. It's lethal injection euthanasia.
Unbelievable. There's things beginning to bubble up, Wesley, and I'm wondering whether you think that it'll get some traction. But there's some chatter about, you know, perhaps the Nuremberg Code being used to stop this. Do you think that that's a possibility?
No, honestly, the Nuremberg Code mainly dealt with human experimentation. For example, it requires that animals be used in medical trials before people. And of course, the Nuremberg Code came out of the medical Holocaust, in which disabled babies were killed, where people in the concentration camps were experimented on, and all of that stuff. But I don't see that happening. I know there's a lawsuit in California saying that it violates equal protection and so forth. You know, I hope they do well, but I just don't see and don't expect the courts to invalidate assisted suicide where it's legal.
And I think that is exactly why what we are doing now in bringing this to people's attention is so important.
It's really important to stop it before it gets a foothold.
Exactly. In the United States, I know there have been some states that have been successful in keeping all of this at bay.
Yes.
Do you see that happening more often or less often as we go forward? I mean, I see California.
That's very interesting, Molly. Right now, I believe it's 10 states by statute have legalized assisted suicide when you include the District of Columbia. And I'm going to go through the list real quick. Hawaii, California, this is off the top of my head, Oregon, Washington State, Colorado, New Mexico, New Jersey, Maine, Vermont, and Washington, D.C. I think that's the complete list. And most of these states are very left-wing leaning. But there have been a lot of states, left-wing states, where they've tried to legalize it, where they've failed. Maryland, Connecticut, New York State, Massachusetts, just to name four. Mm-hmm. And the reason they failed is that there's actually quite a diverse coalition opposing assisted suicide, which includes not only pro-life people, but disability rights activists, which are probably the most prominent reason why more blue states have not legalized assisted suicide. The disability rights activists tend to be part of the liberal policy structure. They tend not to be certainly pro-life on abortion, but they look at assisted suicide and they say, you know what, we're the targets. They're saying that because people need assistance with body functions and, you know, cleanliness and so forth, or that people can't walk, this kind of thing, that we don't deserve equal protection from suicide. And in other words, suicide prevention for all people instead of for some people, which is what when you legalize assisted suicide becomes the practice. Mm-hmm. And so the disability rights folk are very effective campaigners against assisted suicide, because in blue states, pro-lifers will be just ignored. Mm-hmm. But the disability folks, rights folk can't be ignored. Also, you will find there's still, medical profession is still holding the line. I mean, there's a attempt after attempt to force them to go neutral, but the American Medical Association still opposes assisted suicide. Many advocates for the poor, oppose assisted suicide because they're saying, wait a second, people don't even get quality health care yet, and you're talking about assisted suicide. What could be cheaper, by the way? Mm-hmm. Many, even civil rights organizations, may oppose assisted suicide for that reason. LULAC in the past, which is a Latino civil rights organization, was against assisted suicide. They don't advertise it a lot, but they do stand athwart the agenda. Mm-hmm. In conservative states, pro-life people have more sway, but you also find a lot less desire to be transgressive and kind of destroy all of the traditions that have brought us through 200 years of history. And so in more reddish states, assisted suicides have not passed. The only reddish state where assisted suicide may be legal is Montana. And that was because of a court ruling. It didn't technically legalize it, but it was a very muddled court ruling that said, well, it's not against public policy, and it had to do with living wills and advanced directives. It's a very muddled thing. So that's the circumstance we find ourselves in now, and it really hasn't changed in the last couple of years.
You know, this is what I see happening, you know, here in Ohio for sure. It's one of those things where you get to it starts to bubble up, and then there is a really strong pushback when it comes to, you know, people understanding. And that's why I think that what we are doing right now is so incredibly important, because for the most part, I think a lot of organizations, you're so right, you know, a lot of civil rights organizations are opposed to this. So we are we are winning from that perspective, but we've got to keep it up. We've really got to keep it up. We've got to keep going.
It's important the problem that the pro-euthanasia people have is that it's not high on people's agenda list. I mean, people are not marching in the streets demanding the right to be killed by doctors. It's something that people really don't like to talk about. If they're forced in a poll, well, if you had a disease in which nothing else could be done and nothing could be done to alleviate suffering, you know, which are false premises, they'll probably say, yeah, you know, I don't want to be in that circumstance. But in fact, this is being driven by a small cadre, relatively small, of ideologues who are very well funded by the likes of George Soros. And the point is to, in my opinion, undermine the traditional Judeo-Christian ethic of the society. I'm not talking about religious faith, but the idea of human equality, that, you know, we each matter equally regardless of our physical situation in terms of illness or disability. And it is to open the door to a much more licentious society. Mm-hmm. And therefore, it's important for, you know, pro-lifers don't give this enough attention either, in my opinion. That's why I'm glad you have me on from time to time. Mm-hmm. They get very emotionally caught up in the abortion issue because, you know, babies. It's a little less easy to be emotionally committed to protecting elderly people in nursing homes and gay men who are dying of AIDS. And so you often find that pro-lifers, you know, they take the right position, but they don't have the energy and commitment to fighting assisted suicide that they may have to trying to prevent abortion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, I think you're right there. And, you know, it's one of those things that I'm really pleased now for certainly with my contemporaries here in Ohio.
But I have to say, let me interrupt. I'm sorry. I won't say that's true about the leadership. The leadership does keep bringing this up. The first time I spoke to the National Right to Life Convention was a long time ago, back in Orlando. And the room was only half filled, and I got a little angry. And I said, if you're not as committed to fighting assisted suicide, protecting elderly people, people with AIDS, that's when AIDS was really a much more forthright issue in the society, you know, people with multiple sclerosis and so forth. Don't call yourself pro-life. Call yourself pro-cute.
like a true Wesley Smith.
And I thought, well, that's the last time I'll be invited back. No, guess what? They liked it.
Yeah, no
because,
kidding.
You know, You remember Burke Balsh used to be with National Right to Life committee, and he was their anti-assisted suicide guy. He was happy, and the leaders of the movement of that organization were happy because it is an attempt to get people to expand their concern and expand their jurisdiction. And it's not easy.
Yeah, exactly.
Because there are so many things going on in society that are transgressive and destructive. I mean, you know, there's only so much time in a day, and many pro-life people do it in addition to their normal lives.
Exactly, exactly.
Where people on the other side get paid a lot of money to make this their careers.
Yes, and exactly. It's
a very difficult situation.
Yeah, yeah. And honestly, you know, the thing that we deal with abortion too, which is a, you know, the subject, but you know, it's the quantity, the number, the number of people of human life that is being lost through abortion, as opposed to the, you know, and it does every human life is worthy. And that's why I love what the organization that you're with. I mean, I think that's an amazing thing. A human exceptionalism. I think human exceptionalism says it all. And that's, if we're going to be for anything, we've got to be for it all. So, but it also brings me to another thing. I emailed you earlier on to ask you if you would mind talking about an article that you've just recently published. And it's about, the transgender puberty blocking, things that are going on, particularly in Alabama. Can you, and I, the reason why I want to bring this up, because I think this is going to be another front that which I think many of the pro-lifers have actually taken it on. But I think it's more and more people of, you know, of your ilk that are going to have to address what is happening within this whole environment where human exceptionalism is being completely trashed, you know.
Totally. Yeah. The transgender issues, I think, it's really come to the top of my concerns in the sense of dealing with children and protecting children, because they're the most innocent and vulnerable to this agenda. And you now find that thousands of children are experiencing in this country, a different article I just published, I think a few days ago, that thousands of children have had, I mean, we're talking about 14-year-old girls, mastectomies.
I know.
You may have had hundreds of genital mutilations of children, certainly puberty blocking, which has very serious consequences. For example, development of bone, neurological issues, potential effects on reproductive abilities, and so forth. And we're told by the American Radical Administration, and I'm saying that because the Biden administration saying the only approach that is legitimate is if your child says, I'm wondering about what my sex is gender affirmation. Immediately get them into what's called social affirmation, which is the pronoun game. You know, getting a new name and never using what they call the dead name and so forth, quickly followed by puberty blocking, which can be followed by facial reconstruction surgeries of teenagers.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
And mastectomies, as I mentioned, and much more rarely, but not unheard of, a genital,
mutilation.
Castration. And/or a destruction of vulva and vagina.
Yeah.
And those children and adults too, but I'm focusing on children, will have health concerns about that the rest of their lives. So some states have begun to try to outlaw these procedures in children. One of them was Alabama. And a trial judge said you can't do that because it violates equal protection of the law based on sex. But the Court of Appeals in the 11th Circuit ruled 3-0, no, this law that protects children does not violate sex discrimination because it treats both sexes the same. Girls cannot be made into boys, quote unquote, and boys cannot be made into girls, quote unquote, that this is a legitimate state function to protect underage children. And that's even more important when you think about what's happening in Western Europe. Several countries in Western Europe have now hit the brakes hard against this puberty blocking and surgeries in children. United Kingdom has stopped it for the most part. I mean, almost all. The most recent was Denmark, which 4 years ago, 65% of children who presented with gender confusion were put on the transition track. Now it's 6%.
Wow.
Sweden has stopped it. The health authorities in Sweden, for the most part, unless it's in a testing or a study. Finland has stopped it. France has stopped it. Molly, these are not Bible Belt countries.
No.
These are not countries that say Jesus wouldn't want this to be done.
No.
These are socially liberal, social democratic countries who have looked at the data and said, my goodness, the data supporting the benefit of these interventions is almost non-existent, and the harm is very real. Plus, studies have found that about 90% of children who present this way eventually grow out of it. That is, it's transitory is the term that was used by the United Kingdom. And you also have the major increase in people detransitioning, saying, oh my gosh, I was wrong.
That's right.
And look what these doctors did to me, particularly, and it's children. There's a woman named, young woman named Chloe Cole, who is probably the most prominent detransitioner now in the public eye, who had the confusion at age 12. She says that the doctors told her parents if they didn't go forward with this, she would commit suicide. She said she was not suicidal. And she had a mastectomy at age 15. Can you imagine?
Oh, my goodness gracious.
And then when she was 18, she realized, oh, my gosh, I am a girl. And now she is raising the alarm about what's being done to children. She's brought a lawsuit against the doctors, with which I wish her very well. And so these things are very, very important. And if we're about protecting children, we have to protect children from these kinds of interventions. This is a moral panic. It's an hysteria. You now find from a very tiny percentage of children presenting this way, particularly in girls, it is growing exponentially. Girls saying they're boys, girls having their breasts cut off, girls having their breasts bound, called binding. It's a terrible concern. And I think at the same time, blue states, the same ones who are approving abortion through the ninth month, are saying that if you do not permit transition, it's child abuse, that
That's
a parent
right.
can lose custody. And California has, I think Colorado, I could be wrong about Colorado, but I'm not about California, has declared itself a transgender sanctuary state. So that, let's say somebody's in Texas and there's a divorce and the child says, I want to transition. And the custodial parent says, no, you're not going to do that. We're going to get mental health interventions, which is the approach Western Europe is advocating, and see what happens as we go forward. And the other parent who doesn't have custody steals the child and takes the child to California. Well, under normal law, and I used to practice some domestic law, California would have to return the child to Texas because that's where the child was domiciled. That's where the evidence is. But California is now saying in a trans case, they will not return the child regardless of the law. And in fact, will shield the child and the, let's say, kidnapping parent, to use want of a better term, from the consequences of those acts. It's very disturbing.
We need to make sure that people understand what this is, what this is all about, and really start pushing forward. I mean, we're dealing with it right here in Ohio. There was just an article this morning about suburban Ohio where the transgender is taking over the YMCA in a little tiny town. I mean, this is ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous.
And schools.
Yep. And schools are doing the same thing.
Saying that they will not tell parents.
Exactly.
You know, if a child presents with a serious concern, and you don't think you're the sex you're born, that's a serious concern, they won't tell the parents in many schools.
Yeah.
And they say, well, that would cause abuse. No, the parent has a right to know what's going on with their kid to find the best way forward.
Exactly. And at the end of the day, when everything goes south, it'll be the parents that'll be the first ones called in to clean up the mess.
Yes. There was just ruling, I think it was in the state of Maryland, where Maryland says you are not allowed schools to tell the parents.
That's right. I saw that.
And a judge said that's ballot, and it's just insane.
We got to blow the whistle on this stuff, Wesley.
Speaking to, in fact, it's happened more than once, to a pro-life group, and somebody once raised their hands and they said, you know, we're going to win because we have more children than the other side. And I said, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
They don't have to have children. They're going to steal
yours.
They're going
to steal ours. Exactly. Wesley Smith as well. Thank you so much. As always, we've got to keep on doing this, and I will be inviting you back on a regular basis. Every time I see something that just catches my eye, Wesley will be back here with us. So thank you so much, as always, Wesley. God bless you lots. Don't go anywhere. I will be back with you right after this very short break with another world-class, inspiring guest.